The Friday panel join me in studio this morning. I'm joined by Lahinch Hotelier Michael Vaughan, Bernadette Kenny, CEO of Blue Box Children's Charity, and Dermot McMahon from Sherry Fitzgerald McMahon. You're all very welcome to the programme this morning. Unfortunately, we're going to talk as probably about politics. I don't know if anybody got a chance to look at the TV yesterday and the first day of the 33rd Dáil. Dermot, did you get a chance to...
I watched bits and pieces of it and heard some of the coverage over the last 24 hours. It was it was a bit of theatre, really.
Yeah,
I suppose. In between the introduction, between the Healy Rays playing the accordion outside, right through to people throwing their gloves down at one another inside as to and marking their lines as to what their territory would be over the coming weeks. I don't know what way that's going to play out, but I suppose probably there was no comeback from the kind of language that Micheál Martin and Mary Lou MacDonald used against each other. It was very, very clear that I don't see how they could come back from the type of discourse they had yesterday. So it seems really hard to see how a government other than something with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will be put together unless Sinn Féin can really pull the cat out of the bag, which is a mix and gather of all kinds of different views and aspirations and hopes and put together an agenda which will look very different from I would have thought what Sinn Féin would have wanted from from what they've given to their electorate and which they say they have a mandate for. So it's just going to be a bit of a mess as the politicians grind us down over the next few weeks and change our opinions in terms of what will be acceptable, what won't be acceptable. Will it end up in another election? I don't know, it's not good. It's not good for the country. It's not good for us. It's not good for business to have that uncertainty hanging over us. But you know what? I think the Irish people over the decades have been very good every now and again at saying, look, this ain't bloody working.
Yeah,
throw it back at you. And I'm not afraid of change as well. You know, sometimes you need to throw things out. It mightn't be the different people thinking in different ways to what the way I might think, but I'm not afraid to see, well, look, there are things that are wrong, and we're really struggling through the leftovers and the fallout from a very, very difficult recession, and certain sectors within our economy have been absolutely decimated, including most particularly the construction sector, and the effects that is now having to the social fabric of the country and how the country works and how people live. I don't know. It will be a bit of entertainment. If nothing
interesting
else.
Time ahead. Bernadette, I saw you nodding your head there. Did you get a chance to peek in on what was happening in the Dáil yesterday?
I didn't see the telly, but I was listening to radio as I worked during the day. For me, coming from a mental health perspective and from a children's perspective and disadvantaged and minority communities, I was disgusted with how they talk to each other. And it might have been theatre, but we have Glore and we have some great theatres for that. And I think children and young people, and particularly young people, because there was a large group of young people that voted for Sinn Féin, I think that we owe it to them to show that we can communicate with each other in a much more civilized manner, in a way that we can negotiate with each other, having different views and finding compromises. So I was appalled at that. I thought, if we're really talking about change, that's the kind of change we really need to look at. And young people, and when we were all young, hopefully in the studio, we didn't just come from Mars, that we get really idealistic, and they have a right to be idealistic and to have expectations and to want their country to change and to bring their voices forward. And young people's voices should be heard and young adults' voices should be heard. But we're doing it the same old way. Like, I hear Sinn Féin saying they want to bring change, and I'm pretty neutral in terms of, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the rest of them. I think what it boils down to for most of us in Ireland is how our individual TDs work for the communities. And in Limerick, we've had some good ones work for the community. In Clare, we've had good people work for the communities. And we need to bring everybody along in change. But change also starts from the top, how we show ourselves, how we negotiate, how we talk to each other. And I didn't see anything or hear anything yesterday that brought any kind of compromise or understanding that, look, the Irish people are at the forefront. Yes. It's the Irish people you're working for, not the past. I think our history should be acknowledged. I think that there should be truth said, and so that we can move on and heal from some of the past. And I think Sinn Féin owes that to be honest and upfront so that healing can occur. That's where I was with it, Pat.
It certainly, Michael Vaughan, it certainly wasn't going to be a day of patting each other on the back and sharing a cup of tea and a biscuit. It was going to get hot and heavy. A lot of hot heads up there as well.
Well, it's funny. I was in Dublin yesterday attending a tourism meeting, and my route brought me through Stephen's Green and down onto Molesworth Street. And I was there just as the Healy Ray clan were gathering. It was quite a colour. And yes. One of my best friends is the manager of Buswell's Hotel there, Paul
she
Gallagher.
Does very well.
And Paul, that on a day like that, on any day like that in politics, the buzz around there is phenomenal. There were families abroad. There were 48 new TDs elected to the Dáil, and all their families were there. And that whole sense of occasion was quite palpable. And the idea that we have a democracy that can bring 48 new entrants in to a pretty staid old system, because, you know, the party system has been there for a long time, and what they will bring to bear in... I mean, yesterday was a set piece. It was a set piece in politics. I think everyone had... It was choreographed right from the beginning, even to the point of the people who were nominated to present the various nominees for Taoiseach. So that's the day that was in it, and I think we can't expect much more than that from the Dáil on a day like that. The serious business is happening elsewhere, in other buildings, in back rooms in Buswell's Hotel, etc. And there's about 4 or 5 weeks of it to go before we see anything coming out of it. So I think it would be wrong from people, I suppose, looking in from the outside would say yesterday it was a very jaundiced view of it. You'd say it was a politics that we didn't vote for, that this whole shenanigans. Mm-hmm. But I think in the background there is some serious manoeuvres. You can see it inching on the programmes. I was watching Primetime last night, and you can see positions inching a bit here and there, and I think it'll become more clear. But one thing's for sure, isn't politics, it's the art of compromise. And I think no matter who you are and what party, somewhere along the line you've got to do the business.
But is the uncertainty, I wonder, damaging to us as a country? We have a caretaker Taoiseach, a caretaker government, and we could have for 5 or 6 weeks into April, Micheál Martin was suggesting as well. Is that uncertainty damaging to us?
Well, I think in the short term, I think you would have said it was damaging maybe 10, 15 years ago, but if you look at the political turmoil we've had in Britain over Brexit and the various elections there. You look at Italy that never seems to be able to cobble a government together. You go to the German situation, which is falling apart now. You know, this is the new age we're in. Look over the America what a mishmash it is to produce a presidential election. So I'm not too sure that it really does. I think in the long term, I think if we get our business done in a couple of weeks, I think, and get down to business, there is a fear factor. You saw the shares drop there in the banks and that, because they felt that Sinn Féin were going to nationalise house building. Now, I'm not too sure that that's ever going to be possible, but you have that fear. And a friend of mine said, wouldn't it be great just to get it over and done? Because if you had stable government, foreign direct investment is more assured. People do look at political situations and the stability of a political situation before they invest. So, yes, all those things come into play. But by and large, let's have hope.
Michael mentioned housing there, Dermot. Do you think that there is uncertainty, obviously, and there will be for a few weeks yet. Could that be damaging in more ways than one to Ireland on the international stage, and of course at home, closer to home?
I think a few. It depends on how long it goes on for. Mm-hmm. I think in the last election, I can't recall how long it took the last time, and I suppose it was. And I suppose we've the benefit of the experience of that. So I think we now know that it takes time to put our governments together, and that is a function of the electorate. And I would agree with an awful lot of what Bernadette has said in terms of politicians who look after their community, but at a higher level, you have politicians who look after to their community at a local level, which are hugely valuable, and some of them do excellent work, good quality professional politicians who work with integrity and work very closely with their communities. But still, at the, you know, as Michael has said, at the top level, it's still a horse trade, and the art of compromise, it's got to be pulled together over the coming weeks. I don't know how damaging it is. I think uncertainty is damaging, and if we learned anything from last year, that uncertainty, that kind of cloud that hangs over things is unhelpful. But I think we have the experience of the last election to know, look, it'll sort itself out. And I think the wheels of the country kind of keep turning when they're not talking in the Dáil. Do you know what I mean? We've kind of realised now that actually, you know, the machine just keeps working and the people in the economy keep working. So, you know,
are the people confident that because there are no people in the Dáil that there is no work being done, or there is work being done, rather? The public accept that, you know, the show goes on, the country goes on.
I think they do, and I think you've had a number of economic commentators over the last couple of weeks who've increased their rating in terms of how much they think the Irish economy is going to grow over the next 12 months. From a housing perspective, with the results of the election, you saw some of the publicly quoted companies like Cairn and Glenveagh and the banks, as Michael said, their share prices dropped, which seems incredible when you have a situation where everybody wants to build housing and realise that housing is required. I think they probably don't have a clear picture of the reasons and the many multitude of reasons that contribute to it not happening. Most importantly, is just how economical it is. And when you bring it that back to a clear context, how economical it is in different parts of the county to actually build and produce housing for people.
I have to refresh my own memory because you said you remember you couldn't remember the formation. It was around the same time frame. Mm-hmm. It was February 2016 and went into April. Yeah. There were three votes for Taoiseach, and the minority government finally reached on the 19th of April. So Micheál Martin's prediction that it could be April mightn't be very far off the mark if they can come to agreement. But then,
if they can come to agreement, and just the numbers this year, this time, are trickier even than the last. It was tricky last time. It's even getting trickier this time.
And a lot of new faces at play, and new issues here as well. The whole Sinn Féin thing has really thrown a spanner in the works, many would think.
Could I come in there, Pat?
Yes, Bernie, that's right.
Because I hear our other guests and they're speaking from certain perspectives around business and the economy overall. And I'd like to bring kind of the voice of the folks that never get a voice. And they are doing their day-to-day, and what they're hoping for is that they get better paid jobs, that they get into education, that for some of them that they need mental health treatment, and I know that's going to come up later as well. I mean, there is, the day-to-day means that I'm still, you know, people are still on the list for mental health services. There are not enough places, therapy places, for instance, with Blue Box. I've got loads of people, children looking for being referred into us, and there isn't enough funding there. So people like me, representing and working with and being a day-to-day person, says, yes, we're going to carry on. I got up this morning, I got up yesterday morning, and I'll get up tomorrow morning and work on behalf of groups that don't have a voice. And people will get up and work in the hotels. And I think that we can sometimes get a little taken off into, and it drives me up the wall, into, you know, what the economy is doing and how the Dow Jones is doing and all of that. But it's the day-to-day, I think. And people live with uncertainty all the time. The majority of Irish people live with uncertainty all the time, and particularly the marginalised and disadvantaged, and children and young people. So I really want to speak for that, because we can talk economics, but a lot of Clare FM listeners are out there. They often contact you, or I often meet them, and people are listening in Limerick. Mm-hmm. Hi to Limerick. That say, well, this doesn't affect my life, what's happening overall in the economy, or they don't see it that way. I can't get a house, or I can't buy my first house, or I'm homeless, and a lot of people are still homeless. And I was thinking this morning, I was driving in, Pat, how windy windy and rainy and cold it is. And my heart went out to folks, over 10,000 people in this country that are homeless.
Yes.
And a lot of children are homeless, or they're living in one hotel room. Let's not forget that while people sit in back rooms and discuss.
So irrespective of whether they're the government in place, life does go on.
Yes.
When charity groups are looking for supports, or people are looking for housing, it doesn't happen overnight anyway. The fact that we don't have a government for 5 or 6 or 8 weeks isn't going to make any difference.
No. And to be honest, Pat, the amount of politicians that have promised me at Blue Box that they'll take it here and they'll try and get us more funding. Mm-hmm. You know, I could build a house with the amount of support that I've been given around that. That doesn't come out in money. And I think one of the things this time for people is they were fed up of not being heard, of not being seen, of not being acknowledged. And they went for a political party that were promising them that they would do something. So there's a lot of onus, I think, on Sinn Féin to deliver. But there's a lot of onus on the other two parties and all the other parties to look at the needs of the Irish people and not the needs of their own political careers.
Okay, I think if any of you are back on the panel in the coming weeks with Gavin, I think we'll be talking about this again and again. If anyone heard Fianna Fáil councillor Cillian Murphy, we were talking this morning about CSO figures, we were talking about the way the west of Ireland being left behind, and we were talking about the lack of hotel spaces. Michael, on that, we talked as well about the Wild Atlantic Way, and someone made the point during the election campaign that wonderful idea, we've got to keep building on it. Is the whole Wild Atlantic Way concept working?
Oh, it's certainly working, but not to the extent that we envisaged originally in terms of the kind of developments that would happen along it. Because originally we envisaged a couple of thousand kilometres of roadway and walkway along coasts all along the Atlantic Way, drives off into the like, for instance, places like Kilfenora that get eclipsed because the emphasis is now on the coast, that we'd bring people in and experience more of the real tourism and where people live. So the plan for it was pretty good, but our tourism budgets have been cut. The capital expenditure of tourism agencies, particularly Fáilte Ireland, was cut severely over the last number of years. So the ambition that was there originally hasn't realised to its full potential, but it's still going along. And you talk about Kilkee and building hotel rooms. You won't build a hotel room, a new hotel. You won't build a new hotel room itself for less than about 150,000 per room. So if you're talking about a 20-bedroom hotel down in Kilkee, you could be talking about 2.5 to 3 million, but probably about 3 million,
yes,
to build that. It quite honestly, and knowing from Lahinch in my own situation, it isn't sustainable unless a good portion of that money is already in the pocket of the person who wants to build it. So someone coming into the West Coast and saying they'd look at developing a hotel, they won't do it outside the cities of Galway, Limerick and Cork, or Killarney, unless they have a legacy or they have some benign investor. So we really, what we have to do is build up small businesses, somebody who has a house in Kilkee or Kilbaha or wherever it is, and says, I'll take 2 rooms of that, I'll do them to a good standard, and we'll have a homestay, whether it's Airbnb or bed and breakfast, whatever it is. That's how it'll be built up, and piecemeal, bit by bit. We're not going to get the big investment. What the West of Ireland is all about, and it has been for years, is small family farms, small enterprises trying to make themselves bigger and better each year. And when you look at the heat map that's there for the incomes,
yes,
and it's quite disturbing, because you see we're below average industrial wage. And a lot of the reason for that is the seasonality and part incomes and people doing couple of different jobs, or maybe even just self-employed. There's a lot of people self-employed along there, but there's no doubt about it. We have a situation in Ireland where the whole of the development has gone to the East Coast and in around the Golden Vale, and you see it there on that map. And really, the West Coast, we need a radical programme of change and development for Mizzenhead to Malinhead. And the Wide Atlantic Way was part of that, but we had a grouping here in Shannon way back called the Atlantic Way, which said that we needed to create a counterpole along the West Coast economically, and roads were part of it. Shannon Airport was part of it. There's a lot to be done.
Absolutely. The figures, of course, we should say, were based on the 2016 census, and Cillian Murphy was hopeful that maybe the figures that would arrive, it won't be soon after the next census, would be more promising. But Dermot McMahon, are you still of the opinion, are you of the opinion, and Michael clearly is, that the East is still getting the vast majority of the cake?
Oh, there isn't even a shadow of a doubt. I mean, I think there was a heat map in one of the papers in the last couple of weeks, I'm sure Michael saw it, of the number of hotels that were under construction in Dublin city centre at the moment. I can't remember how many it was, Michael. I was actually shocked.
Oh, there's about 17 at the moment under construction. There's a lot of... And the difficulty is... The cost of building a hotel room in Dublin at the moment is about 350,000 per room. So you can imagine that.
That's compared to the 150 you mentioned earlier.
When you think about that, that in hotel terms, for every euro you spend on building a hotel room, you divide by 10 for the price of the room. So you're saying that those rooms will have to be sold at nearly 350 euros a night.
Yeah, they're certainly charging well in Dublin these years.
Like there's just no question of it.
But is that Dermot down to our politicians not having a stronger voice? I mean, can we blame our West of Ireland TDs for not getting more for the region?
I don't know if you'd blame, but there's an amount of responsibility that falls at their feet. And we've had a very Dublin-centric government over the last 4 or 5 years. Dublin has effectively become the constraining factor in the growth of the Irish economy now, because it's at capacity. It just doesn't have it. Like speaking to somebody I know who was working on the construction of one of the Intel plants up in Leixlip, they can't get the workers on site. One of their problems is they've nowhere for them to live, to even work on the construction of one of the Intel plants. Like it's a different world. Like it is just so far removed from a situation where in the principal town in County Clare, being one of the only places where you've got new homes are under construction, and they're under construction at a level where the prices are just about buildable and bankable, and at that the incomes that are available within the hinterland can't really cope with the prices that are being charged there. They're just about there, you know what I mean? So we're living in two different worlds there, and there's a huge onus on the next government, and a lot of the requirements that are needed for community groups and everything else require the economy around it to be working well in order to feed that money down into it. And we're in Clare in particular, we're very fortunate in some respects in Ennis that we have that infrastructure of motorway from Limerick to Galway, but that creates its own problems as well. And I think Michael is completely right in terms of, like, even this morning listening to, I was very concerned this morning at a European level, they were talking that they're going to reduce the cap budget by 50 billion euros. I mean, that has huge implications. Absolutely. For farming in West Clare. So what have we got in West Clare? We have tourism, and the kind of tourism that Michael has described, and, you know, families working multiple jobs and maybe having a couple of rooms that you can use for tourism during the season, but in the off season they might have a small farm or something like that. An ageing population. It's very worrying. I'm very concerned about it.
Bernadette, Dermot mentioned two different worlds two different worlds in the east and west in this country. Do you know from talking to people working in the same area as you whether the east is favoured more for supports for charity groups and organisations?
Yes, it is. And that's not to take away from them. Fair play. Mm-hmm. Great that they get... we can never get enough. And I think society is set up that way, that the poor remain poor, so the rich remain rich. And I know that's very argumentative, but that's how it's. That's what I've seen in the three countries that I've worked in. But I do believe that it is Dublin-centric. A lot of they can attract a lot more funding in Dublin. For instance, the corporate social responsibility funding. When there's more corporations and more businesses in Dublin, then they will meet the needs of the Dublin communities that put in for the CSR funding. Down here, we've in Limerick and Shannon, we only have a certain amount that we can go to. I mean, one of the things that is my bugbear is that often these large corporations will do their CSR funding for Africa or India or somewhere abroad. Now, that's fine, and those people need love and care as well. But there are people in Limerick that we work with that are the most disadvantaged in Europe. So there are areas in Limerick that are the most disadvantaged. Those children are to most. What more can we say and appeal to that? Yes, we definitely need industry down here. Killian was this morning a bit slow in answering you, I thought, around that. I think tourism is a great industry. I think we could exploit it even more. It's a great product, as it's called. But by doing that, we don't bring them down to Mayrhus or South Hill, or we don't bring them round the backs of Venice, the tourists. So what do we need? We need industry that is permanent, that's secure, where people can get secure jobs. They know that they can pay their rent and their mortgage. They know that they can pay for their children's books and school. Tourism is an industry that is, and Michael's put it very well on other programs here, that it's very seasonal. So we really, I think, in terms of working with our disadvantaged and our communities, who are Ireland too, they mm-hmm. are the people of Ireland too. They're not something at the side to be felt sorry for. They're human beings that have needs and dreams the same as everybody else. And they need, like in Blue Box, what we do with giving therapy to traumatized children is we give them an opportunity to allow themselves to be healed so they can learn. When people are traumatized, they can't learn. And so that's a really important thing, that that work gets done on grassroots. Therefore, then they can go to LIT and they can go to UL, excellent universities and colleges that are really reaching out to disadvantaged communities. But we need industry down here too.
We've been talking about some very, very serious issues, and equally as serious, the story of the death of the television broadcaster, Caroline Flack. Bernadette, I can't say that I knew very much about her before her tragic death.
Well, she did have a big history and a big following in the news and in TV entertainment. She was on Strictly, and I think she either won or came second. But I could see there how insecure she was. She was also involved in the X Factor earlier on, and there was gossip about her and one of the lads that won the X Factor. So she's been trolled about her sex life and her life outside of work and in work. So she had a major following. I think the saddest thing for me, Pat, in hearing it, like I as a professional, as a therapist, I could see that there was something up with her. But she even said it. She was trying to say that she did have mental health issues, that she was depressed. And I feel like the trolling we were talking about off air about it is huge, and it really brings children, young people, adults to an extreme place in themselves where they start living in this dark world, not knowing who they really are. They're listening and watching what other people say about them. They lose their sense of self. And I think for poor Caroline to to be brought to that edge, I mean, her boyfriend didn't want to bring charges, and yet the police decided, or the prosecution decided. I mean, I work with children who are victims of domestic violence, and listening to this case wasn't a severe domestic violence case. I wish they'd concentrate on domestic violence and severe domestic violence. I mean, at the moment, Tusla has put out to asking all organisations for feedback about how we deal with children and victims of domestic violence, and is there enough housing for them, going back onto housing, is there enough supports for them? And the big answer is no. So rather than talk about poor old Caroline and her trolling her, let's talk about the issues of domestic violence in the real world that affect a lot of people way down. Because I'll stick my neck out, I didn't see this as a domestic violence case. I saw it as something that she was in an upheaval and with the boyfriend, and she lost it. She threw something at him, and then the police wouldn't let it go. Why? Because of popularity. So I think the whole thing of trolling and mental health, they're the issues we should be talking about.
And on that, in case the listeners haven't heard, and we were talking about it during the break there, that the latest is that the Metropolitan Police have reported themselves, they have self-reported to the police watchdog in relation to their behaviour, particularly in the days up to the death of Caroline Flack. Dermot, would you have heard of her? Would you have known of her before this?
I didn't know her, and I've passing knowledge of the programme Love Island, because I have two teenage children.
Blame the kids. Yeah. Yeah. I know you watch it.
But I don't like it. They love it. Mm-hmm. They at 9 o'clock every night it has to go on, and It's just, it creates a standard or an image of the way they should present themselves, the world, that I'm just completely uncomfortable with. This lady's world was very open, you know what I mean? She was very exposed. She was obviously was a very sensitive person, and the language that was used in the post against her was just absolutely appalling. But if we bring that down, it doesn't have... So it was very public in her instance, but if you bring that down to a teenager or a child, their world is that group of people who are around them. It doesn't have to be out in the greater media, but their world is that group of 50 people that's in their chat group or whoever it is. Yeah. And their self-worth has now become the opinion of what those 50 people think about them. And how one person within that group can shatter that child's confidence and have an impact on them, I just find terribly upsetting to think that that can happen. And to have a program that is just so completely focused on self-image and nothing to do with the values of what is good about that person and what makes them feel good about themselves. And I think they're just... social media has great power and great good, but people have to learn that they're going to have to take personal responsibility. And if they won't learn it, unfortunately, I think they're going to have to be made responsible for it.
Yes.
Because you cannot use such a medium to damage other people in such a way anymore.
But it's allowed to happen, unfortunately, and hopefully that's there may be lessons learned from this. But Michael, is it very easy or is it too easy to blame social media and the media generally for what has happened to this particular individual and others, some would say?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we go online, we almost seem to abrogate our own personal responsibility as to that's I suppose the moniker of the keyboard warrior and people. The instant thing, there was, I remember being educated and a teacher once telling me he had army experience as an officer, and apparently the rule was that if someone insulted you or had some sort of altercation with you in the army, you would wait 24 hours before you would respond, because you'd have a chance to reflect and then make a decent decision. And it was supposed to be the kernel of decent decision making to wait a while. But you see, now we're just in there like Flynn, we're doing it. And we've been really, I suppose, hijacked, and our education system has been hijacked, because the teachers who are teaching our young children, they didn't come up in this age, and we don't really understand it. And it's only now we're seeing the real, I suppose, detrimental effect that we can all have on social media. And how do you stop it? People are now saying, look, don't give children phones till they're 13 years of age, but we're gone beyond that. There are children with phones at their first communion, and this is the world we have created, and we have to start taking their responsibility back. And how do you do it? Because every child has a device in their own room. They're not under the constant supervision of their parents. You know, before you could go to somebody in the local village and say, look, maybe if they were bullying somebody, you might have a word. It's gone into the wide yonder, and we do have to do something about it.
Just one comment on that in terms of taking that responsibility back. I think a huge onus lies on the phone manufacturers and software companies, Apple, Samsung and these companies, and Google. Apple introduced recently a screen time option in terms of controlling, so that parents could control the amount of what children could access. I've tried to use it with my children. I can't get the damn thing to work. It doesn't work properly. You'd need a degree to figure out how to make it work properly. And the kids are so smart that they'll have figured out a workaround around and Google something on YouTube to figure out how to get around it. That's not good enough. Parents,
it's a catch 22, yeah, absolutely.
Parents should have control and be able to have control over the usage. If the device is there, the Pandora's box is open, it's out. So, but they should have some control, and those companies should be helping parents.
Okay, Bernadette, finally on that.
Well, also, I just want to stick up for teachers, because I work in many schools in Limerick, and teachers are working really hard in both educating themselves and trying to educate the children. But I agree with you, Dermot, that it clearly has to come back to the parents, and the parents need educating on it. But I do believe that the social media companies do have responsibility as well.
Okay, before we leave it, anybody who might have been affected by any of the issues we've discussed, or indeed the whole story surrounding the suicide of Caroline Flack. The numbers that might be of interest to you, the Pieta House, Midwest, 061 48 4444, Samaritans 116123, email of course joe@samaritans.ie, and the Clare Suicide Bereavement Support Group 086 056 5373, or 087 369 8315. I'm sure they're on the website someplace in any case. And finally, they're the list of numbers we have in front of us at the moment. Thanks again to our panel this morning, Bernadette Kenny, Michael Vaughan, Dermot McMahon. Thank you all. Have a great weekend. Thank you.